basically just applied that ancient knowledge directly to the physics of the day. And his uniqueness, I suppose, is it's similar to Galileo in that he just basically was prodigious at self-study. And so the pursuit of a certain mastery of the classical material. So classical mechanics, you know, Newton is the founder of that, those notions of the state space continuum. And so it's really indispensable in terms of our concepts. You know, in the same way that Leibniz, his approach is indispensable in other ways. So there's a nice complementarity for sure. And in fact, when we get into like quantum mechanics, it's the problem of the scaffolding of the dimensions of space. You run into representation issues in the algebra that start drawing explicit links between space and symbolism, essentially. And that, I think, the discrete nature of the symbol and the continuous nature of the geometry, it's a combinatorial problem of the labeling of space, essentially. And so I think if we're going to look at where we stand today in that situation, I think you have to kind of look at the depth of the kind of nature of the binary representations in the I Ching, and so sort of wonder what is the multi-level nature of interpretation at play in something as straightforward as a binary code. And then you can go further using this as a kind of an analogy to space. It's just a coding space. You know, you start to imagine everything in between the binary, and you get a rich symbolic interface of a type of continuum, anyways. I think the problem, the combinatorial problem of the discrete nature of the coding of symbols in a binary or ternary or quaternary systems, as you go, like, you know, modern computers are 64 bits nowadays, so they send information in packets of 2 to the 7th bits, or is it 2 to the 5th? It's two to the 6th, I believe. Would be 64. Anyway, so you have this sort of in a 64-bit piece of information, you have a certain space of representation that is allowed, and so you can create essentially an alphabet out of that space, and that alphabet is essentially what comes down to a type of graphical interface or the components of the basic units that you can manipulate. So we're able to kind of move from space to coding space to language and back into space by reconceiving space as a kind of computation. Anyways, that's a whole nother loop of dialogue there, but I don't know.
Computation maybe carrying a sense of this latency that Clinton mentioned early in the, I think before you called in actually, Chris, but this latency of information processing as a kind of reflection on, you know, practice or performance.
Sure, or the hidden effects, too, of the sort of particular characteristics of a specific coding space. You know, when you're looking at a byte.
Can I take this to a little bit of a different zone? And I don't want to interrupt. I want you guys to keep going. But so, like the kind of formative techno producers is Basic Channel from Berlin, right? And they started doing their stuff in 91, 92. And all of their records are named after calculus terms. And I've always kind of really liked, I've just been kind of, you know, dug into that a bit. Quadrant, hyperprism, just, you know, all geometrical terms, but usually these calculi terms, just dealing with shape and distance. And then distance is one of their tracks. And it's just this whole talk about latency itself. Their music is sort of the sound of latency and nothing else. It's like literally, you know, usually you listen to music and you hear a synthesizer or a guitar being delayed. Well, Basic Channel is sort of just the sound of delay itself, and using the sound of the latency and delay to kind of, to create a larger thing of sorts. So I'm sort of wondering if the structure itself is somehow like just straight up like very simple calculus. It's weird, Chris, so I don't really grasp math well at all, and then whenever you kind of flatten it out like this, it makes it, it's like, oh yeah, I really just have to, I think people, because we don't focus on the literalism of word or letter, and we get involved in all these other things, but we do the same thing with number, and I always forget that if you just kind of sit with these concepts, well, they already make sense to you.
A very interesting object for calculus. So a calculus is built on axioms around the ability to differentiate a function. And
sure.
That's, what is the rate of change? You know, in a linear system, the rate of change is constant. And that's Galileo, his system of analysis of velocity with gravity, was just essentially, an extrapolation of the, linear scale of his, compass he invented for, engineering and war purposes. And he applied this basic linear principle to everything in nature he could. and so it became a unique grammar anyways. And, but the calculus is just looking at essentially, rates of change, in systems that are, compact in a way they're in natural systems, they're often infinitely differentiable. And so there's no limit to the amount of subtlety in the signal, so to speak. You have one variable changing another variable, but that variable is being changed by the next one. And so the it's almost like a continued fraction effect, where you can get down to the bottom of a system, you know, when there's a final linear rate of change, when it's differentiated, it would have a zero rate of change, essentially. And that is the kind of grain of what I call a differential crystal. And it's basically, you can visualize a differentiable sort of system as a set of numbers, and then you just find the differences between those numbers, and then the differences between those differences. And each time you do this, you're getting a difference, which is a rate of change. And so once you look at the second layer, it's the rate of change of the rate of change. And then finally, in a finite system, you end up with a continuous series of a constant, like two or so, something of that sort.
So DeLuna's difference in repetition is actually about calculus.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Do you have a good passage there or a reference?
I haven't looked at that book in like 10 years. Blake might know way better than me.
Oh, yeah. No, he talks about it a lot. He's very explicitly interested in...
Sure.
You know...
So would it be...
Lautmann's work in philosophy of math, for example.
Would it be correct to say that the religion of zero manipulates pure calculus then? If calculus has, if it's hard to get to the bottom because there's always these differences and stuff, the religion of zero kind of fudges that up by adding zero into the equation. Am I wrong here? Because I don't know anything about math. I mess up like 7 minus 3 sometimes.
A question. Who's the calculus guy you were talking about, Chris, 3 minutes ago? He developed the calculus with Leibniz or Newton?
I mean, if we're talking about just pure differential, like tangent spaces, Newton came up with the geometric interpretation there. But it was Leibniz who his symbolic notation allowed you to basically apply those operations in a much like sort of faster way. It was doing some of the thinking for you.
Who applied it to nature? You said he applied the calculus to the lines of nature.
Yeah, that was Newton and also Galileo.
Oh, okay.
But he was...
And I had a question. Yeah, go ahead.
Well, I was just mentioning Galileo because he has this kind of semiotic penetration of nature through the analogy of the linear scale on the slope of his compass.
Anyways,
that's
okay. And I had a question for Zach. Who's the 91 group or something you were talking about?
Oh, Basic Channel, which I didn't even think, but the name, Basic Channel. Well, I talk so much about this, like, pure channeling thing, and a basic channel is much different. But so what I wanted to bring up here, too, is with this talking of digital and analog, Basic Channel, like, they're kind of, like they would sample, like I said, like the sound of a delay itself with nothing on it, right? Well, that's really reminiscent of reggae. They were reggae collectors before they heard techno. And in fact, they became reggae artists in the 2000s with rhythm and sound, their main thing. It's two guys, Moritz von Oswald, who's actually a von Bismarck. It's 100%. He's from the von Bismarck family. He'll talk about it. And Mark Ernestis. And so the thing is, they entered the genre, techno, which was digital. Now, no matter what you're making with techno, is a digital genre. Well, they were these reggae collectors from Berlin, these white reggae collectors, who heard Detroit, second wave, underground resistance, you know, Jeff Mills, Mike Banks, Robert Hood, who two of those three are extreme Christians, and that's the whole reason they make music. They heard that, and they kind of had this crazy response to it and started making, in a sense, trying to mirror what Underground Resistance did. But Underground Resistance was black dudes in Detroit who were around this kind of P-funk meets Kraftwerk thing. Now, what Underground Resistance brought to the table was 80s Belgian brutal industrial. Underground Resistance were the first techno DJs to play like Front 242 and stuff like that in their music, and Nitzer Ebb. So they brought this really aggressive edge to like the smooth jazz fusion meets Kraftwerk of Detroit. Now, Basic Channel, they heard Underground Resistance, but what they did was just take the pure sound of like reverb, decay, delay, and space itself, and in a very analog sense, using analog synths, field recording, samples, literally the sound of nothing. Like, there's Basic Channel tracks that are just modulated hiss. And at first, like, you could say maybe it's noise music, but you can dance to it. And so what they did is they took this digital form, but it's always this digital analog mirror. And that's why it popped into my head when Chris said something about, you know, calculus and, you know, Leibniz's first primitive computer systems, like, being very analog, but also being the first example of binary or digital. Basic Channel kind of did the same thing. And, like, so their records, you know, like, techno, people who are into aesthetic theory, well, they kind of hate techno and rave because it's anti-aesthetic. You know, you look at most early techno, and it's a bit cheesy. Like, the labels on the records is great, but it's cheesy, and, okay? Basic Channel, like, they're making these records, but the logos on them all are it literally looks like just a Xerox glued to the record. It's like this really grainy, analog, you almost can't even see the letters or any of the, like, the logo sometimes, because it's just gray on gray on gray. And that's what Basic Channel, like, when I say they revolutionized techno, I mean, they really kind of recreated it in 91, 92 and laid the groundwork. But the whole thing is they brought in this whole, and yeah, for sure everyone has heard people say this about techno music, just endless gray on gray on gray, just shades of metallic gray, you know, thousands of shades, and nothing in the middle. There's no black or white in Basic Channel. It's not black and white television. It's the fuzz when the TV goes off. That's literally all it is. It's the sound of that fuzz snow, but modulated. And, you know, they only did 9 12 inches Basic Channel. They had a lot of side labels, you know, that did sort of other stuff, but Basic Channel itself only did 9 12 inches in a 3-year period. And, you know, I think Basic Channel is, at least for my generation, pretty much what got people like rock music or indie rockers or metalheads. Basic Channel is what gets them into techno. It has a mass appeal that other techno music doesn't, and it does it by completely avoiding any content and just focusing on form. And it doesn't really have signs, but it focuses on signification and subjectivity itself. It's some of the most elegant music I've ever heard. It really makes sense that one of them's a fucking literal royal. it's pure elegance.
I heard of this basic rhythm, it's called, or what is it called? Like, they also went by another name?
Rhythm Sound, and then they also ran a label called Chain Reaction, which they didn't do any of their own records on, but like a lot of bigger techno dudes did, like Monolith, Hallucinator, Matrix. The Chain Reaction sound is a mimeograph of Basic Channel. So it's a bit Porto Ricks, was on Chain Reaction, Substance, Fluxion, which is another calculus thing, Fluxion. You know, so and then there's also this label called Maurizio, which was like a pure minimal techno label, and a little bit housey. And then they also had, Main Street, which was a pure deep house label with like black people singing. It's like black, and you can't tell it's Berlin white dorks. It literally sounds like soulful black house, all the Main Street records. And Main Street is round one through round five, each record. And, I mean, yeah, you can hear Basic Channel in the corniest radio techno, and you can hear it in like the purest underground techno. It's that drive that we all associate with techno, just kind of like a dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun. That's not Detroit techno. No, Detroit techno is like frilly. It's P-Funk meets Kraftwerk. Detroit techno is like that type of thing, you know? It's playing. they're playing, yeah, they're playing key. Like, coming in, right? But you don't get that whole just like push of the air, like that's basic channel. That's what they brought to the game. Just that no synth, just pure delay pumping at you, and then so you know via that nothing, you see endless shades of it. And did you grow up in Russia or no?
No, I grew up in LA.
Okay, yeah, because like Russian techno specifically is very post basic channel. I mean, all the Eastern European techno would not exist if not for basic channel. When I first heard about them, a friend of 17, they were like, well, it's like a bass drum with like literal trash on top of it. So I expected to hear like, I expected to hear the sound of Krang and Shredder fighting. But you know, it's not really Super Ninja Turtles. It is, but in a subdued way. It's really just a sound of air with a thousand different filters on it.
Yeah, it has like that side chain sound.
Exactly. In a sense, you could maybe say basic channel were the ones who brought side chaining to the whole thing. Yeah, that's a great thing to say. That's a great way to put it. Just if you look out like the Discogs or something, like I said, they only have 9 records and they're all pretty easy to hear, and it's the type of thing that whenever, like, you know, I could play it for my mother, who's in her 60s, and she'd be like, oh, I think I've heard this before, and she hasn't actually heard it, but it's so formative to just what this, like, you know, within 6 years later, like, 99, DJ Rolando, the Jaguar, like, that track, which is big in video games and stuff, you can still hear basic channel at the bottom of it, just that sidechain supremacy. Yeah, sidechain supremacy.
Yeah, I grew up like hating techno because I was listening to a lot of punk rock and I just hated all the mainstream stuff. But
same here.
Same thing. Something happened and I just grew more fond of like these guys bombing those gadgets, those 909 gadgets in Detroit, and like Larry Heard's story, how he played with a band that they sounded like Mahavishnu Orchestra. They played all this crazy jazz music, and then he just got a drum machine and like a acid bass thing, and just went to a warehouse and just started laying down some really simple thing that had nothing to do with the crazy jazz sound, and like all his old bandmates were like, "What the hell are you doing?" But it was just like so revolutionary.
And yeah, and then you check it, like with Larry Heard, I used to be really confused with that, because I'd be like, well, he makes the most minimal, subdued music. How the fuck was he in all these, like, fusion groups and funk groups, right? But then you listen to a track, like, now just pick the most obvious one, Can You Feel It? That's, like, the biggest house track ever, and he wrote it. Yeah. That's a track that, I mean, it's in goddamn Grand Theft Auto. That's a track my mother would actually recognize if I played it for her. And, It's so elegant and so minimal, but then it's so polyrhythmic and polyphonic. It really is still of that fusion thing. Larry Heard is a legit minister. I'll say it. Like, Larry Heard is a true minister of sound, man. It doesn't get much better. I think I like Chicago house more than Detroit techno. I like house a lot more than techno. I grew up, my dad played a lot of funk music and jazz music when I was a kid. So house kind of connects a bit more in a way. You know, techno is about ascension to learn about the now and learn about your body. Well, house music is the opposite. House music is about, it's actually about descending. It's about becoming totally nasty and human, but to ascend. Like, house music is much more church than techno is. Techno is sort of like heaven itself, whereas house music is the church, man. House music is like where you get dirty and confess your sins.
Yeah. Like, techno music, that led to, like, psy and trance and, like, gore, like, really, like, crazy psychedelic sounds, but house music is more about just like going with your chick and just dancing and sweating it out, you know, just getting down on the dance floor type of deal.
Yeah, and so, you know, even and in Detroit, where Detroit's famous for techno, but people get really confused because Detroit and Chicago have a symbiotic relationship always. You can't have one without the other. So you go to dance, You go see techno DJs in Detroit, and, well, they're going to play mostly, like, old disco records and weird synth pop and stuff, but you get this vibe where, and I'll bring Basic Channel up again. And one time I was at this rave in Detroit, and I saw a DJ, Derek Fuzlako, for, like, 2-3 hours. He just played the whole Basic Channel catalog. And he's a younger white dude, but the crowd was basically all 60 to 70-year-old, maybe 50 to 70-year-old black married couples, just like loving the night and dancing with each other. And it's really cool in a sense because, you know, in these small middle American cities, techno and house have nothing to do with counterculture. They don't. They really don't. It's I always say this, it's meta culture, you know, like. I was scared of techno, I realize now, because the punks liked it, the skinheads liked it, the hip-hop guys liked it, the old people liked it. Techno has no division. Techno has no aesthetic, pure techno. And house is a bit different here, but, like, you know, pure techno is really just like, well, let's come together in communion. For real. It's a deep form of communion. And it's also exercising demons. But, I mean, also taking them in, too. You open up the channel fully. But, you know, it's not a subculture. It's not a counterculture. And I think that's really important for people to understand. I kind of realized that a few months ago. And once I realized it, I kind of brought the idea to a lot of friends who have always been anti-techno in a sense. And once I kind of dropped it to them like that, they were literally all like, this is beautiful music. This is some of the most beautiful music I've ever encountered. And something they all brought up too, and these are people who aren't even Christians, so they were all like, it's not satanic the same way everything else I like is. And I didn't realize that aspect. But I was like, yeah, you're actually correct here. This is fully correct. It's not about indulgence, techno. And yes, house is, but it's still meta because it's like, okay, well, indulge yourself to the point where you cannot take it anymore. Indulge yourself to the point of sickness so you throw up the indulgence. They're both very elegant meta musics, and you know, it makes sense to me that they were quickly killed with drugs and stupidity, because techno rightly scared the shit out of, I hate saying this, type of thing, the elites, the powers that be, you know, and it makes sense it scared the shit out of the church too. The church was like, oh my god, this is so satanic, because the church doesn't want to see people coming together and finding Christ in things that are not, you know, regulated by the church. And that's really what this music does. It's very redemptive and communion-based music, I think.
Wow, that's a very interesting way of looking at it. But as far as me seeing the difference between techno and house is, house usually would have like more funk, more disco elements, whereas techno would be some type of like the newer advancement in synthesizers. There would be like, it would be definitely faster, that there would be like crazier, maybe more metallic sounds.
Yeah, that's fully correct. I mean, house is just electronic disco. It's meta electronic disco. You know, it really, like a house song will still have that bouncy bass line that 70s disco has. Techno might appropriate that. But yeah, techno is basically like, let me show off my spaceship. You know? techno is outer space theory, where house is just like church theory. It's just really like, hey, this is, or it's just down home, like dirty cooking theory, whereas techno is really like, well, hey, you know, let me fly you around space real quick with my really expensive synthesizers that I can't even tell you how they work.
Yeah. And like, obviously, it just goes from like a, from one end to the another, like a full spectrum. Like, you might find like some of that English acid rave stuff in the middle. Where the synthesizers are not getting that crazy yet, but they're on the way.
Yeah, they're about to break. They're about to break in a sense. They're like about to hit it. Yeah, the English stuff is a great counterpoint, and this is something many people don't realize when they talk about dance music histories, because they focus so much. I mean, you know, it's always like focus on this like, oh, black people created techno, and well, I don't think any human has ever created anything, and yes, black people spearheaded techno and still do, but that's kind of missing the point. Even you know, early Detroit, no Detroit techno would have came out if Neil Rushton didn't, who was a Northern Soul producer, didn't go to Detroit and sign these fucking dudes, you know? So England was always the third position with techno and house, where, you know, that was the first audience that either of those scenes had. You know, early house music, the first big single is, James Silk, I think, Love Can't Turn Around, which is like kind of, in a sense, it's just like electronic Luther Vandross. But you see all these videos from like 86 of him on Top of the Pops in England playing that song. It's really funny because house music wasn't really a thing yet, so it wasn't really, there wasn't any theory behind it, right? So they still thought they had to play live and like put on these 1980s like bright business suits and, you know, Jerry curl their hair and have, you know, female dancers behind them pretending to sing and stuff. It's really funny. But yeah, the British created the true anti-environment to Detroit and Chicago. And, then you start getting like the British acid, and then we get like what they call hardcore, you know, like British hardcore, and then you get jungle and drum and bass, which, you know, I'm not a huge fan of drum and bass or jungle, but I respect it. It's true elegance, and it's really complicated music, and it's pretty funny how it's...
Does that go into rave next? Is rave come after?
No, rave comes before. Rave is basically hardcore. What I said, rave is basically hardcore.
Right.
Which is the British, poor British people, both white and black, who could not afford synths or outboard gear, so they bought cheap samplers. And they imitated the hip-hop people, but sped it up, you know. They did breakbeats, and they were really, you know, the British were really influenced by Public Enemy. Even though they made rave music, Public Enemy was sort of the biggest influence. So it was like, okay, let's take this Public Enemy Bomb Squad production, but add a sampled 303 acid line, or add a sampled 909 type thing. So what
they were also deeply influenced by reggae. There's a lot of reggae and dub music. That Jamaican music that came out in the 70s, I believe, where the guy would take a reggae record and just experiment with it and put extra reverb and make the vocals very quiet and give extra delay.
And that's sort of what led me into techno in the early 2000s. Is I worked in a few reggae stores over the years. I'm really serious about reggae music, also. I used to like DJ pure reggae as well. I used to collect reggae 45s. And, it's funny because Basic Channel and Jungle are the total opposite. Like Basic Channel took reggae but went elegant with it. Whereas the British took the whole like, okay, these like Jamaicans who live in literal war zones. And like, if you look at videos of 80s dance hall, right, you're going to see a huge dude with dreadlocks with like an Uzi in his hand, literally screaming over a pre-recorded record. I'm not exaggerating here. Like, I used to collect these sound tapes, and I used to love to get ones where guns went off in the middle and then the thing was ruined. And that's so dark, but like, I get it. They sell us this kind of stuff. And, the British latched onto that, and the term jungle itself comes from a sound tape, and I forget which sound system it is, but, you know, they keep yelling out, all of the jungle is them, right? Well, the jungle is Tivoli Gardens, which is, like, the worst projects in Kingston. You have the Seaview Gardens and Tivoli Gardens. Tivoli Gardens is where Christopher Coke Dudas, 10 years ago, this Jamaican warlord, was, you know, found by the DEA to have a literal, like, these projects are, some of them are abandoned. He had a literal torture chamber in a project building. They found, like, bodies tied up and dismembered. So this is, like, a real, real hell world, the jungle in Jamaica. So the British took this term, like, well, junglist, that means you're bad. That means you kill people, you know? So they really took it to the next level with the jungle music. And, you know, and then even the term drum and bass is just straight up lifted from sound tapes, too. You see the early 80s records, I mean, like, you know, straight drum and bass, CD face, you know, like all this stuff like that. Like, that's a big thing with dub music, like drum and bass, the drum and bass. Like you said, they add the reverb, they strip the vocals. Well, what's the one thing they don't take away usually? The drums and the bass. And when they do take them away, they're more present. That's the beauty of the dub mirror. When they take the drums and bass away, well, they slam harder. So, yeah, the British, the British, it's kind of funny. They only saw, I would say, the surface elements of reggae. I mean, they really incorporated them really, really well, whereas Basic Channel is just depth. It's the sound of depth, the sound of drowning in effects, whereas, like, Jungle and Drum and Bass is sort of this, like, let me break free from the side chain. Oh, my God, the side chain literally has me chained up. I need to break these chains. That's what the Amen break is. And again, I'll take it there because I love to, but it's pretty telling that the main sample in Jungle Music is the Amen break and from the song Amen My Brother by the Winstons. You know, you think about the meaning of that term, well, what's an Amen? It's how you end a prayer, okay? It's how you end your prayer. So this whole music is based around sampling the end of a prayer. It's very, very redemptive music.
Wow, I never looked at it that way.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm really stuck in this lately, so I kind of look at everything this way now. But it's nice too because it gives me a new perspective on stuff, and it really helps me see how a lot of the stuff that I used to look at only in a negative sense. Like I would be like, oh, I love jungle music. They shoot Uzis in the air. You know what I mean? Just this horrible. Yeah. Horrible, like kind of satanic thing. You can actually look at it and be like, "Wow, no, there's like deep beauty on the other side of this." So, yeah, that's kind of, I actually wanted to bring that up today. Just some stuff about techno. I'm glad it kind of seeped into there a bit.
Yeah, and this music that the reggae would usually that they would sing over it. That's just a rhythm, right? They would just they wouldn't have any musicians. So like they would just take one track, and then like maybe 10 different guys throughout the city would put out a song with just that as the backing track.
Yes, exactly. So the thing with that was, it started, I believe, with Duke Reed, and I don't know now in Jamaica, you understand the DJ is not the person who plays the record. That's a selector. Right. In Jamaica, the selector plays records. The DJ is the mic DJ. The DJ is the guy who raps before there was rap. So I don't know who it was, but it was Duke Reed, maybe Prince Buster or something, right? So Duke Reed cut what they call a dub plate to play at a sound system dance, which a sound system is like just a crew that plays records outside. But they also do kind of like what Chris does, where they're like how Chris is kind of interested in building radios themselves. Well, there's people in the sound system who just only build speakers and just build wires, and they're part of this like whole like thug crew. It's amazing. They're like, hey, Einsteins, but then they're like gangsters, you know? So the sound system is and they compete in Jamaica. Like they'll literally set up across the street, and one will play a song. A guy will come, you know, chat over it. And people will dance, shoot their guns in the air. And then the next one goes across the street, and they battle. But so it was like 67 or 68. Duke Reed cut a dub plate for a sound dance, and he accidentally left the voice off it. And he played it live, and he was going to, like, cue the record back. But he noticed that people were sort of losing their minds a bit more because they were hearing a familiar song from the radio but with the vocals taken off. So it was this kind of, this, like, mirror experience, you know? So that's where dub started being born from. First, it was just the version, which yes, that's the rhythm. You know, it's just taking the pure rhythm and versioning it. So what versions
Did you say Lou Reed?
No, Duke Reed. Duke Reed.
Duke Reed. Oh, for crying out loud! Yeah, okay.
Yeah. So like versions. I'd be sick if it was Lou Reed. That'd be hilarious. with versions as opposed to dub. Dub adds effects. Dub takes away the sound to add space. Well, versions was just like, okay, we have an instrumental rhythm of this hit. Why don't you add a guitar solo over it? Why don't you add bongo percussion over it? You know, and then we'll play it live so the DJ can chat over it. And that turned into dub, where dub is like adding effect to create space. And I always say, too, dub is some of the most like book of nature music in existence. Literally an acoustic interpretation of the Old Testament. Like you listen to dub music and you feel like you're walking through the desert with Moses. It's intense. It's really intense. But yeah, so with this whole rhythm thing, you know, that was to understand Jamaican music, you have to understand the concept of rhythm. It's a bit like beat in hip hop, but it's different too. Beat is something that comes from the concept of rhythm. But after the 70s, you know, you get dancehall. In the late 70s, you get rub-a-dub, which became dancehall, and dance hall is purely rhythm-based. It, you know, where in the 70s you had these tracks that 30 people did vocals over, or in 1985 you have the fucking Sleng Tang, which literally, last time I checked, there was 20,000 versions of it. I'm not exaggerating here. I looked on a website and said there was 20,000 versions, and I mean, I know hundreds myself. So the thing with dance hall is, instead of, it's literally about, okay, like, we're all the same. We're all children of God together. There's no difference. We're not creating anything new. We're just here to shape the same thing. And you get it, you know, with these dance hall DJs, or MCs as we call them in the United States, they don't talk about anything. They literally just, like, list groceries. If they're not talking about God or talking about, like, really nasty sex stuff, which, I mean, Blake actually talked about this too, it's you know, in Jamaica it's called slack. The dirty music is called slack, and then the godly stuff is called culture, or roots in culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the slack is something that they claim they want to avoid, but you have to embrace the slack to live. And I'm talking about not in the Jamaican sense, it's like slacking. You got to slack here and there. But, yeah, you know, when you get to dance hall, it's literally like some of the best songs are just dudes being like, well, I went to the market. I bought scallion, tomato, and garlic. I bought fish. I went home and cooked it in a dish. Like, it's really simple. And when I first heard it, I was like, wow, these are really stupid third world people, because that's how we're taught to think. And I'm like, no, this is so much deeper than, like, someone who's trying to convey a quote-unquote deep message. Like, these people are literally, you know, because it also too, they weren't stars in a sense in Jamaica. These were people.
Yeah.
Now, I used to live with a Jamaican who swept at King Tubby's studio, and he voiced a couple records, because that's how it worked. You would, you know, go to the studios because you knew the studio man had money. Or what would you do? You would sweep. You'd bring a broom. Literally, I mean, that's a big thing in Jamaica, especially with the Bobo dreadlocks. They bring their broom everywhere to make money. The Nyabingis don't care, but the Bobo Dreads, they bring their brooms everywhere because they get change for it. So they would just go to the studios and sweep, and then it would be like, you know, whoever producer jamming, Tubby, would be working on a track. They're like, yeah, any little youth them want to lay down the voice them, you know? And like, just, whoa, okay. So, you know, most of the Jamaican stars became stars by accident. There's only one Bob Marley. You know, like, he's the one that was sold. The rest of them are all these, like, little kids who happened to get on a record, and, like, maybe one of them became Garnet Silk, who was like, wow, this kid, he knows rhythm. He understands rhythm. Oh, my God. And you know, it's funny, too, when these dancehall people would tour America, they play these horrible shows because Americans are, it's such an actor-based society, that Americans can't accept a Jamaican just a jiving in front of a sampler. That's, they're like, oh, I got ripped off. I came to see a performance. So when you go see live dancehall in America, it's always these fucking live bands, right? And Jamaica, it's a, what is the term here? Not royalty, but it's a society, it's like a Brahmin society in a sense, where the people who in the 2000s that were touring behind these dancehall people, like family man Barrett and, like, you know, his brother, the people who literally played on Bob Marley's record, there's not many actual musicians in Jamaica. You kind of, like, prove what you can do, and then you're, you know, going to a studio. And the way, like, reggae works, too, it's pre-hip-hop, it's pre-techno. Like, a lot of dub is not live sessions. It's like, okay, we have the guitarist in this room all day pretending to be Eric Clapton. We got the bass player pretending to be, you know, Curtis Mayfield's bassist. You know, so let's just record everything they do, and then I'll straight go Brilliant Mess Burrows cup style and make a track. And I'll shut up in a second, but the other thing I want to add is something many people do not understand about reggae music, and I'll even just mento and ska, and I'll fuck reggae, mento and ska from the 50s and 60s. That music is this, okay, in Jamaica, the radios were not high quality. The radios were trash because it's a third world country. Mm-hmm. So they got two stations. They got the New Orleans station, which New Orleans is a primarily black city, so it played black music. It played, like, proto-soul, proto-funk. The other station they got was Nashville, which I think we all know what Nashville played. Nashville's a white city. They played country. So people don't really understand that Jamaican music is just soul and country combined. That's it. You know, Johnny Cash supposedly would unwind his guitar strings and then put paper in the middle and rewind them so his guitar would just do the like and not really be melodic, so it would just be a rhythmic instrument. Well, Jamaicans did that because they heard Johnny Cash did it, you know, and that's why you hear all these, there's so many beautiful country covers by reggae artists, and this is something people don't know, but a lot of these people do solo records with like an acoustic guitarist, maybe straight up country reggae. That's a huge, huge thing, but there's not an American audience for it, you know, so they like, you could say in a sense, Jamaican music is just Willie Nelson meets Curtis Mayfield, and that's really all it is when it comes down to it, and always has been. It's pretty weird, because most people don't recognize the country and western influence in Jamaica, but it's there, just in the way the swing is. They have the bite of soul music of like Otis Redding or something, but it's that swing of country. It's slack. It's laid back. You know, it's like you're lying in a hammock with it. You're lying back so far, you're standing up straight with the reggae country appropriation.
Wow.
Yeah, I never knew that you could get that country was a major influence on reggae.
It's huge, and I didn't know it either until I lived in Columbus, Ohio, and this, most people don't know, but I, at least at the time, outside of New York City, I lived there for about 2 years in the mid-2000s. Columbus was the second highest Jamaican population in America outside of New York. And so there was a huge, huge reggae scene there. And, you know, my friends and I, we hung out with all, like, 60-year-old black men. It was really funny. These guys, like, they were... These guys taught me more than like any academic ever taught me. And, you know, they would be like, oh, you're white. You must love Merle Haggard. You know, and I'd be like, oh yeah, sure, he's great, but I don't really think about it. They'd be like, well, you should think about it. You're white. He's like you. He made beautiful music. Like, what's wrong with you? You know, and I'd be like, oh, okay. And they'd be like, stop trying to be black. Like you can respect us, but stop trying to be us. That's what these fuckers get wrong. You know, like you have a beautiful culture that you're taught to ignore, and like, you know, we're from a culture with no education, and we appreciate your white culture better, and we don't discredit our own black culture or your black culture for that. It was really eye opening in a sense to see the way that, you know, people that you would consider quote unquote uneducated, well, they could teach the fucking whole academy how to reshape their lives in 2 days. Like, just go smoke weed with a Jamaican who leaves literal Uzis lying around his house, which when I moved in with this Jamaican, they left the Uzis laying around for like a week. Sometimes they'd be like, hey, don't come home for 24 hours. I robbed a weed dealer and he's gonna come shoot up the house. You probably don't wanna be here. And that's how these dudes get down. But you know, you go, also too, I mean, these guys, they would literally trap me at like 2 a.m. I'd get to the bathroom and be like, yo, Zach, man. And they want to read you some scripture, them. And they're like, oh, no, not again. Not again. You're going to read me the whole book of Psalms. You're going to read me all the Song of Solomon. And, like, if they only read me one book, oh, God help me. That would be a relief. They would trap me for 8-9 hours at a time, just reading the Bible to me and going on and on about, like, the same shit I go on and on about now, just like the Satanism and everything. I'd be like, what is wrong with these crazy Jamaicans? Oh, yeah, pop music, satanic. Porno's satanic. Drugs are satanic. Right, right, right. Satan, Satan, Satan. Get something else on your mind. But no, these dudes laid it all out. I have a bunch of tapes of my old roommate, Cushy. This dude, Cushy, he was great. Just talking about the Bible and the world and all this stuff. Like, I got to do something with them someday because they're really something else, man. True education style.
Wow, that's... Yeah, I'm jelly of these experiences.
Yeah, I mean, I try not to blab like this all the time because it's kind of all I do. But, yeah, once you kind of say it, you're like, wow, damn, that's a unique form of education that a lot of us ignore. A lot of us don't realize when we're getting that, you know, like just working in the record store and like some homeless old white guy comes in and he's drunk and he smells bad and you just want him out of there so you can like, so then girls will come in and you can kick it to him or something. But no, that guy might have the fucking, like, the only piece of knowledge you need today. It's true losership. It's true losership, man. It's really just like, you know, it's sort of like McLuhan's thing where McLuhan talks about like, going to the heretics to preach the word. Well, that's what these people do, but they don't do it in a pretentious sense. That's all they know. That's literally all they know. And, you know, Jamaicans specifically get this whole thing about, like, you know, Jamaica's a very violent culture. Jamaica's a very, very depressed place. And so because of that, the way Christianity works, well, if you're, like, really out there killing people, you're probably spreading a message of peace most of the time. So, you know, these Jamaicans would blow my mind because they would be talking about, like, you know, killing someone, and then, you know, 2 seconds later, they'd be telling me about, you know, the benefits of eating raw vegetables, and I would watch these guys eat mixing bowls full of raw vegetables for their meals, like just 4 of them in a row, no utensils. And these are dudes who look like 7 Arnold Schwarzeneggers in one with dreadlocks down to their feet. You know, and you'd be like, whoa, this dude is really ripped like that from fucking broccoli and carrots? And I'm like, yeah, definitely. These dudes know how the world works in a way that no one else does. It's because they come from literally nothing. You know, so when you come from literally nothing, well, you fucking realize you have everything at your fingers. There's no need for this, like, this luxury. Or there's no need for media, even really. It's just this, you already have it. And that's, you know, Jamaicans, they have their own form of voodoo called Obeah, and I don't know much about it, but it makes sense that they have a very, very complex system of magic, because they're deeply involved in both the world and the word in a way that first or second worlders are not.
Right, and this system, it goes back to Africa, right?
Yeah, I would think so. I would think so. You know, there is the whole thing with Jamaica where, like, Marcus Garvey predicted that in Ethiopia, Jesus Christ would be reborn as a black man, and then, you know, Selassie comes into the picture. So there's a bit of a grift with the Jamaican thing, and I'm not saying anything bad about it. But there is cultures like that tend to prey on themselves, I've noticed. So,
It's not perfect.
Yeah, and what they think they find hope in is actually what's hurting them. You know, like, it makes sense that in the mid-80s, the big thing with Jamaican music was like, okay, let me rap about my gun. Like, you'll instead of, like, the grocery list, you get songs where it's just like, you know, the Speci, the M16. Like, they're just listing every fucking gun in the shop and literally being like, we run the gun shop. Like, oh, okay, no, you don't. You probably robbed the gun shop, but you don't run it. Like, it's a, you know, and then you get the 90s, you get these 90s dancehall artists like Sizzla, Capleton, Buju Banton. Well, they all came out with just these crazy anti-gay tracks, like, you know, if you lick pussy, you're gonna die tracks, but, like, I'm gonna throw this girl down and violently fuck her, and that's okay, because the Bible tells me that tracks, right? But then, around 93 to 96, these guys all had these deep, deep Rastafari conversions. Where all of a sudden, they're like, okay, no, we just dress in all white, we fucking live in the mountains or in the woods now, and everything's about Jah. Oh yeah, we still have Uzis, don't worry, we still have Uzis. And like every few months, they still drop a fucking nasty record because that makes them their money, you know? But it's weird, it's really, Jamaica's a great mirror in itself.
Yeah, I think you just got cut out, but I heard you were talking about, like, Jamaica is a great mirror.
Yeah, I'll leave it at that, and I'll pass the mic on this one.
Well, that was a lot, actually. There's lots of interesting stuff there, so thanks, Zach.
Yeah, that was awesome.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. Thanks for letting me puke all over the radio.
I was,
That was not puke. That was pure raw veg, man. That was good stuff.
Yo. Yes, I.
Yeah.
Blake, didn't you live in Jamaica?
Yeah, I spent like 6 months there, I think.
How old were you?
I was like 19. Years old. Mm. My aunt and uncle lived there. And they were missionaries. They're Catholic missionaries.
Oh.
And they worked.
Wow.
With,
Yeah, they're Canadians. Air Force. My uncle was an Air Force guy. Canadian Air Force. And but they're devout Catholics, and they worked for this distribution center for the church. That was my uncle's job. He ran this center where they would get, like, shipments of stuff, like donations from dioceses all over the United States. So stuff would come in. I had a couple buddies there who worked for him, worked at the center. I worked at the center a little bit. And we played a lot of music. At that time, Shaggy was, like, the biggest thing ever in Jamaica, right?
He's the best. That's my man.
Yeah. He was awesome. And so they had all these organs and stuff in the distribution center that we'd play. My aunt worked for a school and got me a job teaching. Basically, I had just graduated high school, you know, but I was teaching grade 12 English and physics at this high school, at this Catholic high school in Mandeville. Mandeville's kind of like in the middle, up on this plateau, like a little cooler than the coastal areas. But, yeah, that was amazing. I had this friend, I met this friend who was a security guard who, like, used to guard this bank that was near where I was staying, at my aunt and uncle's house. And, you know, I would just, like, go out walking, and I met this guy just, like, because he would be just like, chilling on the sidewalk or whatever. So I grew up in, like, a kind of like a hippie town, and so I bought some weed from him. He was like, "Oh yeah, you want to get some weed? Sure, sure." So I gave him, like, some money, like the amount of money you would pay for, like, an eighth, like a little bag, and I got a garbage bag full of, like, weed, like, just plants, you know, stuffed into a garbage bag. Whole plants. I had to, like, strip the plant somehow, figure out how to stash it at my aunt and uncle's house. Yeah, the guy was like, "Yeah, we can, like," he, like, wanted to, like, take me around and, like, you know, like, introduce me to people. He was really nice. His favorite, he was really into music too, his favorite artist of all time was Percy Sledge. I'll never forget.
That
he
makes
was obsessed yep. with Percy Sledge. Yeah.
Yep.
But he was like, he would take me to, like, bars and stuff. We'd, like, have a drink, you know, where he knew the bartender or whatever, and he'd be like, "You can never come here without me, all right?" You know?
Mm-hmm.
And he was always carrying a gun.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
The gun, I think, you know how it is in Jamaica, like, the gun is literally a prosthetic. You know, like, you kinda can't breathe without a gun. It's like the cell phone in modern day America.
Yeah. Yeah, and all the houses are like, the windows are all barred. There's no, like, unsecured entrance to anybody's house. You know, the porches are screened, like, with metal screening and stuff. Yeah, but it was a great trip. And, yeah, that was my first teaching gig.
That's pretty crazy. You taught in Jamaica.
Yeah,
Jamaican physics.
I was teaching conservation of energy and, you know, basic physics stuff.
That's really next level,
and,
man.
And English, yeah.
Jamaican
I can't remember
physics.
What physics.
That's a whole new concept to me, dude.
Yeah, well, it was a Catholic school, so like all the kids had to wear uniforms and stuff. And
yeah, I think the religious aspect of Jamaica people really don't understand, because people have this whole like, oh, yeah, Jamaicans just smoke weed and think they find God, which I mean it's not really false, but Jamaicans are Christian. People don't get that. People don't understand that Jamaicans believe in Jesus Christ. That's part of Rastafari. Like, they believe Selassie is also the second coming, but, you know, I think Christians believe we're all the second coming, in a sense. You know, also all the same people who kill.